Hold on.
What?
Is that necessary?
Yes, it is. This is episode number 7.
Uh-huh.
007 of the guys. Dice Guys. For October 22nd, 2011. Did you like that?
Yeah, it's not bad. Okay, yeah, okay. Going.
Yeah, today on the Dice Guys for 007... We're not talking about 007 at all. We're actually going to have Mike's Forbidden Island review, and we're going to talk about the portrayal of women in modern tabletop games. And, of course, we have our Picks of the Week and Brain Flakes, which still stay crunchy in milk, and they're now with lovely brainstem marshmallows. Oh, man. Trying to kill me.
So, Mike, what'd you do this week?
I planned that intro a lot because I knew 7 was coming up.
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty much didn't do much of anything else. I did a lot of work, and I thought about some things that shouldn't be put onto the podcast. Mostly having to do with people when I was driving and what I wanted to do to them.
Ah, so, yes.
Yeah, I was run off the road a couple of times this week by idiot drivers. So it really wanted me to bring out the old Car Wars game.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Yeah,
we may have to do that sometime
or
soon.
Get the new one. I think there's the new one around.
Yeah,
probably.
So, okay.
So what'd you do?
Well, my daughter's gaming group came over and we played some more Gamma World, which, went over really well. It was a pretty good little play session. And next week I believe we're going to try, doing the role-playing game Scion. So,
I haven't heard
my daughter's
that,
actually going to run it.
Okay. So. That should be fun.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Okay.
Hopefully. Let's go ahead and just jump straight into our Brain Flakes.
Brain Flakes!
All right. What's happening this week in our flakes, Mike?
Well, I came across something pretty cool.
Okay.
It was a video of quantum locking levitation.
Okay.
And this is...
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and this is my science brain
science.
Flake. Yes. So in the world science, this video, it was some kind of demonstration just of simple... levitation of something that is chilled with liquid nitrogen, and it is levitated or put over a rail, okay, basically a sub-zero chilled magnet, and it levitates over a rail and it locks in place because of the forces at work at that level of temperature.
Quantum flux tubes is what they call them.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just little micro gremlins that kind of.
Yeah, it's magic of some sort.
It's got to be magic. So, but you could basically you'll see in the video if you we'll have a link to it on our website at thediceguys.com, and you will see in the video that you can basically turn this thing and it will stay in space whichever place way you put it
at any angle,
at any angle,
upside down. Yeah.
And you can send it on its way so that it follows along the track and hovers at the same levitation level, whichever level you put it at. So you can be low to the railing or higher up on the railing or anything like that. So it's a pretty cool thing. Now, I don't know what kind of practical application it has yet.
Roller coasters.
Really small roller coasters. I don't really see roller coasters for mice. I don't really see a roller coaster being able to be chilled that's that big, you know. Plus the fact that if it's chilled that cold, I mean, it's going to really freeze my ass. So
yeah, yeah. Hey, in the middle of summer, that may not be such a bad thing.
Maybe not. Yeah, maybe not. You'll be going down the roller coaster, and like little plumes of cool breeze will be coming off the non wheels.
Yeah,
until you crash.
Well, yeah, because the summer heat is heating up the rail, which makes it lose control of the cars.
Yeah, you have to freeze it over and over and over again somehow while you're in motion.
So...
Yeah,
yay!
It's cool!
Frictionless death!
Yeah, it's cool, but it's going to be a while before it can practical see some use, I think. Yeah. But yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So, and I think we found some other science stuff, or you did.
Actually, we both kind of happened on to it at separate times, but it's pretty awesome stuff. Microsoft has created what they call the HoloDesk.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a projection of an image.
Yeah. Now, is this Microsoft that developed this, or is this actually someone using their Kinect to do something with it?
Well, I know they're using the Kinect. Microsoft has opened it. It's actually... What's happened, now that you mention it, mm-hmm. get my facts straight here. they opened up a developer's kit for the Kinect mm-hmm. to the general public. So people at universities and stuff are actually developing stuff
mm-hmm.
using the Kinect. And basically there's a sheet of glass being used as the beam splitter, is what they call it. You look through this sheet of glass and you can see the projected hologram images.
Mm-hmm.
You put your hands under the glass and you can manipulate these images because the Kinect is tracking where your hands are and it tracks your facial movements so that it can see where you're directing your attention. And it triangulates and you're able to manipulate objects that don't exist.
Which is pretty cool.
They even showed the possibility of networking this and somebody being able to reach in, you can see their hand as a digital recreation of their hand, and they're able to manipulate the objects on your desk.
Yeah.
Along with you. That's getting into really cool territory.
That's getting into what I like to say, Star Trek world.
Mm-hmm.
And before I die, I fully expect there to be a holodeck that I'll be able to walk into, manipulate holographic items. Now, we're far away from here because you have to look through glass on this. And obviously, you're not going to carry around a big sheet of glass with you in a holodeck. But we're almost there. I mean, they have holograms you can touch and feel because they beam sound waves at you so you can feel it kind of touching. And you can... and otherwise, they have holograms that now you can manipulate. It's only a matter of time. And we're in Star Trek's holodeck. And I'm going to be in some kind of mystery. It's going to be great. I can't wait to be inside a mystery novel.
Right, right. And everybody else will be in porn. But that's a completely different thing altogether.
You know, that's probably how it's going to get, you know, paid for. And
the sad thing is, in our world, most innovations start in porn.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
It really is. But that's what... We are a sexually driven society, and this will come up later in our discussion here today. We're a sexually driven society, so that's where the innovations start.
Yeah.
And luckily, we're able to take it from there into real-world applications mm-hmm. that don't involve having a 12-inch dong.
Hey, we just earned our explicit tag.
Yay, Jason! All right.
But you know, there are other drives for humans, which ties into the other brain flake you found, which was for Scrabble.
Competitive nature, yes.
So what happened with the Scrabble guy?
Okay, in a world tournament taking place in Poland, a guy stopped a match and demanded that the official strip search his opponent because a 2-point letter G was missing from the table.
So he thought he had just pulled the win out of his butt.
So to speak. He did claim that the gentleman had secreted the letter somewhere on his person
mm-hmm.
to give himself an advantage and demanded that the officials strip search him. The officials decided to go with the idea that somehow it just disappeared
mm-hmm.
and refused to strip search his opponent. Yeah.
And the guy did win by 2 points.
The opponent won by 1 point. Which means that that letter G could have actually been crucial.
I'm just having a good time, you know, thinking of a bunch of Scrabble people sitting around a table disrobing. You know,
it is amazing how competitive this is. Apparently, it was brought up when we found out about this. It was brought up that just a few years ago, it was suggested that one of the players swallowed a letter to give himself an advantage. Needless to say, the officials also decided just to let that one slide.
So to speak.
So to speak. They're going to let that one come out in the wash later.
Oh, boy. We don't play Scrabble in the right circles, I don't think.
I think maybe we're a little bit gentle with Scrabble in comparison to the more serious players.
Yeah, well, you know, it doesn't really, really hurt until, you know...
Until you're passing the letter.
I was going to say until you start killing people, but, you know, that's another thing. Oh, okay. Man. So Scrabble is not my pick of the week, even though you might have to pick at it. Never mind, I'm not going there.
Yeah, that's just a little bit. Wow. Okay, but let's do my pick of the week,
shall we? We'll
do
your pick of the week first.
Yeehaw, gosh, snake.
Okay. Well, last week I picked up a game called The Adventurer's Pyramid of Horus. This is actually a sequel.
Okay.
The original Adventurers apparently is out of print at the moment and goes for a whole lot of money on eBay.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it may be a bit before we actually play the original game, but the sequel, Adventurers Pyramid of Horus, is actually an incredible game. It is so much fun. Quality pieces. You actually have the plastic stone pieces for the ceiling. The thing in this game, the object, break it down simply, is you're adventurers, you've entered this pyramid, you're trying to collect as much treasure as possible and get out before you get sealed into the tomb, because each turn a block of the ceiling falls and crushes a square of the game board.
Okay,
and it can, if you're incredibly unlucky, actually it seems to happen fairly regularly from my experience, seals off the entrance of the pyramid. Played two games, and in the first game, the mummies won because all three of us got sealed inside the tomb.
Awesome. I like mummies.
Yeah, these are not nice mummies.
Oh, well, you know, they usually aren't.
Yeah.
So.
In the second game, two of us made it out, and still the third person got stuck inside the tomb. So I'm telling you, it's a pretty regular occurrence that someone's going to get sealed into
now,
a tomb.
Now, this is one in the game that if everybody doesn't get out, then the game is lost?
Yes. That's why I said the mummies win, because we're all sealed inside, we're all going to die.
Okay, but if one person gets sealed inside, you still win?
Then the thing is, the winner is whoever makes it out of the tomb with the most treasure.
Oh, okay. So there is one winner.
There is a winner of the game. This is a competitive game, not a cooperative.
Okay.
Basically, really cool idea. Try and run through it really simple. The first entry area of the tomb is the Scorpion Pit.
Okay.
This is where you find most of the equipment, your first aid kits, your bags for carrying more treasure, stuff like that. There's small, lesser value treasures here, but mostly it's equipment from other adventurers who didn't make it very far into the tomb before dying. The next is... actually, I've got that wrong. That's the Cobra Pit. The... my mind has just done an old man thing. And anyway, there's the pit.
The pit.
Then there's the next, there's a couple of other areas, including the crocodile pit, and there's the mummy corridors. There are multiple ways to get wounded in this game. Mm-hmm. The only ones that can't be treated and gotten rid of are the mummy wounds, so you have to be very careful about getting those. And basically, the number of treasures and the number of wounds that you have work against you on your action points to get you out of there. So it's a really fun game. obviously, my brain did not do well with the details. And maybe we'll throw those up later, you know, or I'll clarify in the next podcast. But
still your pick of the week.
It's still my pick of the week because it was an awesome game. I had tons of fun playing it. And if I'd had more time, I would have played it even more than just the two times that was played this time. So, I mean, I would play it four or five times in a row probably.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that your pick of the week is an adventurer's type, you know, 20s, 30s adventurer's type game. Because obviously last podcast that, you know, I picked Forbidden Island out of my bag.
Unopened.
And I promised that during this podcast coming up, this one here, I would do a review of it, and we would see if it was worth being pick of the week. And in my opinion, it was damn worth being pick of the week.
I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome. The game itself is a tile-based game. You have tiles that you put out randomly into a kind of a square pattern in front of you. You have your tokens, which represent different adventurers. And each adventurer has a different power. Some of the, you know, one of them can move diagonally while nobody else can move diagonally. One of them is a pilot. He can fly from, you know, once per turn. He can fly to a different square anywhere on the island. So you have these,
the diver who can actually swim across sunken areas.
That's right. Because basically what's happening in the game is similar to your game. The island is disappearing as you're trying to find the four treasures on the island.
Yeah.
And
there's a certain tension element in this game, yes.
There's basically a time track that tells you how many squares per turn you're going to be flipping over, or if the thing's going to flood further when you pull a flood card from the deck. And you could lose a piece of the island and not be able to get to other parts of the island where you would have to get a piece of one of the treasures, and you are lost.
In a two-player game, approximately half the island disappears before you get to the end.
Yeah. I'd like to, you know, I can't wait to play it with more players and see how many people get stranded because they can. Now, the pilot, or there are cards in the pilot that you can move people around and everything. But eventually what we're going to do is you're going to try to collect four cards that represent a treasure, and then you pick that treasure out of the treasure pile. As all the players collect the treasures, once you get all four treasures, all players have to move to the helicopter landing and then have a helicopter lift card to get off the island.
Right.
Before the island sinks.
So one of the important aspects of this game is that it is a cooperative game.
Yes, it's
You're
totally cooperative.
You're all working together to try and get these treasures.
But because it's totally cooperative, that means everybody has to get off the island.
Yes.
So if one person is left on the island to drown... Sure, you all can giggle, but you all lose because you don't have all four treasures or whatever the case may be. You don't have all four people. And the whole point of this game is cooperative to, you know, to fight the island, not each other.
Right.
So I find that refreshing, actually.
I have kind of a tendency towards co-op games lately.
And... You know, I mean, I like a good game with some backstabbing and some intrigue and friends that hate you later.
Paranoia.
Revolution. But
correct.
This one is a really good cooperative game. It's made by Game Right, and it is designed by Matt Leacock, who's developed a lot of cooperative games for all you geeks out there who like to know the designers. And it's under $20.
Yeah,
I think
actually,
I bought it for $17.99.
The pieces are high quality.
Mm-hmm. They're resin or plastic, kind of a plasticky resin, not so hard plastic. And the cardboard pieces, the cardboard tiles for the island are really good quality. They're heavy stock.
Yeah,
they're not going to bend and mutilate.
And the ponds are also resin.
Yes.
We think.
And the cards are nicely made. And the artwork is great. And like I said before, metal tin container, which usually you don't get except on the special editions of games. And this came with a $17.99 game.
I mean, really, for the price, this is probably your best value.
Top quality.
This is amazing for that.
So yeah, game rights Forbidden Island, and we'll have a link to that and Jason's pick on our show notes on the DiceGuys.com website. So check it out.
Absolutely. And so, well, speaking of my pick, let's jump straight into yours.
Yep, that was the review. Now I'm going to pick a game for this week. And surprise, surprise, it's not in my bag.
Yeah, it's not one that hasn't been opened. Thank you, Mike. No more Vegas style. Well, I can't say no more, but this one is not a Vegas style.
This one's not a Vegas style. This one is a game called Wiz War. And a lot of people may be familiar with this game. Wiz War came out in the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. It consisted of a small box that contained some boards that you piece together to make your game board, some little counters, and a whole lot of other counters that you had to break apart, and some cards that were kind of funny cards with funny spells on them. And basically you play wizards that you're moving around in this dungeon trying to get treasures and bring them back to your place on the board, and without getting killed by the other wizards.
Right.
And there are all kinds of cool spells in it, like being able to cast walls to block other wizards, or cast fireballs at each other, and other things with little funny sayings on the cards. It's kind of actually pre-Munchkin-ish, if I can say that, Munchkin-ish.
How about Munchkin-like?
Munchkin-esque. Munchkin-like. Yeah, because, you know, it's just a funny little game. And yeah, it doesn't take that long to set up, except for maybe all the counters that you have to kind of split up. But setting it up and learning the game is pretty quick. And it's a lot of fun. And it is being re-released by Fantasy Flight Games.
Surprise.
Yes. And Fantasy Flight Games has apparently bought it. Like, they've bought a lot of other games to re-release. It looks to be a very updated version of it. So whereas I bought it for under $20, you're going to be paying $50 for it now. But you're probably going to get full color stuff.
And you're going to get much higher quality pieces, yeah, to be honest.
In fact, I might even buy it because, yeah, you know, I do kind of like some of the updated stuff. And my version is kind of beat up. So.
Yeah, and so hopefully in a future podcast next week or the week after, hopefully we'll be able to compare the updated version to the original.
Well, it'll be a while. The game is supposed to come out November 30th.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is available for pre-order now.
Mm-hmm.
And from Fantasy Flight Games. So that's going to be my pick of the week. And if anybody wants to go with it, just pre-order it.
Yeah.
And they can get it for Christmas, in time for Christmas that way.
Absolutely.
So, but that's Fantasy Flight. That's,
yeah, doing it. And so, let's talk about the fact that Fantasy Flight is redoing all these games, bringing them into a more modern image.
More modern image, yes.
Modern marketing, higher quality pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that really is of interest right now, at least as far as we're concerned,
mm-hmm,
their portrayal of women.
Yes.
In these games. We're all used to the idea of in role-playing games and, you know, fantasy MMOs. As women level up, the smaller their armor gets.
Yes, unfortunately for
them. Yeah, I was going to say, that we're used to it. Does that make it right? No.
No. But, you know, it's something in the genre.
You know, your tabletop games, yeah, have, for the longest time, been pretty safe.
They have.
In that regard. There's been a few examples
mm-hmm
of game publishers stepping outside the line, but for the most part, tabletop games have been really safe in that regard. The mm-hmm women are pretty much fully armored or fully clothed.
Yeah,
and to be perfectly honest, there hasn't been a whole lot of representation of women in the games.
That's true.
So we get the more modern versions where they're actually starting to bring, yeah, the female characters into the games,
mm-hmm,
and putting a modern spin on them.
They think that means dressing them down, dressing them not.
Not dressing them. Yeah. I see this as a problem.
I see it as a problem too, and so does, oh, what was her name? It's on the blog called So Make Me a Sandwich.
Yeah, Go Make Me a Sandwich.
Go Make Me a Sandwich.
I think there's pretty much a pet peeve of hers.
Yeah.
If you can't tell from the name of the blog.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, her whole blog covers this, and it does it very well. I thought it was really different games and different things. But in this case, it has to do with Fantasy Flight's versions. First off, of their original game, Descent, in which they basically have a lot of female characters that are not particularly armored very well.
Right.
And, you know, they a lot of them, in fact, she says that only one of them has actual pants. And the rest of them are in various stages of panties, mini skirts,
maybe bikini armor,
G-strings.
Yeah.
And posed in fighting positions that don't necessarily represent fighting more than they do submissiveness.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I like this one, the Red Scorpion. The fact that it manages to show her boobs and her butt at the same time.
Yeah, that's a pretty twisted thing, but you know,
that's impressive. That's impressive.
She's artwork. Some kind of ninja lady, so she can do that, I guess. You know,
I guess.
Or she's with Cirque du Soleil. I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway.
But you know, I don't know. Can a Cirque du Soleil person, you know, fight like that?
I wouldn't think so. That does not look very effective.
Yeah.
distracting, yes. Effective, no.
Yeah, maybe that's what they're going for, is distracting.
I will tell you, okay, as a man, I have absolutely no problem seeing scantily clad women and all that sort of thing. Do I think that it's right that they're running into battle in, you know, pasties and the G-string? No. No, that is totally unrealistic.
I'm level 100.
Yeah.
Oh, you must be naked then.
It's like, oh my God, she must be powerful. She doesn't need armor. No.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, come on, guys. There's a prevailing attitude that women have to be sexualized to be sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And I call BS on that.
I call BS on it, too. I've seen some paintings of women in full armor, not with armor that form fits over their breasts. And they're pretty sexy. I mean, they are powerful women that, you know, and perfectly capable of anything. Probably making me leave them alone. So, yeah.
They're perfectly capable of ignoring me and walking away to the guy who's all buff and oiled up. No. Also, another sexist comment. I apologize. But.
Yeah.
Now I've lost my train of thought.
Well, the train of thought is that these are coming out now in board games. I mean, it used to be the purvey of the role-playing games that this kind of stuff was in. And now it's coming down to the board games, Fantasy Flight games in this case, but there's other examples of it.
Right, I mean, they're not the only company that's guilty.
That's doing it now. In fact, actually, I looked around some things, and even Clue is doing it now.
I have to tell you, that was the most in-your-face one that I've seen so far.
Yeah.
They could have... Another company could put a fully naked woman saying "do me" on the cover, and it would be the same at same level as what I saw on Clue.
The newest version of the cover for Clue has Miss Scarlet. Now, Miss Scarlet has always sort of been the sexy one,
the vixen.
The vixen of the people, the people
players.
In Clue, the players. Yeah, I'm stumbling here because I'm thinking it was Miss Scarlet. So, but in the cover, they have cut off her head, showing just her breasts and torso.
Yeah, now...
And that's not right.
Anybody can sit here and say, well, you know, the elements that they were wanting from that particular picture was the look on the guy's face on the left-hand side of the cover, the fireplace in the background to set the ambiance of the atmosphere of the game and such. And that just the way she was positioned in the picture meant that when they put the title across the top...
Cut off her head.
It cut off her head. But the simple fact of the matter is, it's not that difficult to Photoshop her down further in the picture so that her head's included.
Plus...
It almost seems blatant that since her breasts do stand out so much in this picture...
At the end of the E in Clue, says you're reading across Clue breasts.
Breasts and hips, and I mean, it's just the torso, no head.
Yeah, her head's on the other side of the board.
Her head is actually makes an appearance on the other side of the board.
Of the cover, yeah.
This is an image that's really disturbing, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Now, most people wouldn't notice it, but since we're talking about this and we saw this, it's pretty obvious.
And, so, I mean, it's got whether you're noticing it consciously or not, it does make a subconscious impact.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, you know.
I think women are being marginalized, and now it's happening in board games, and I don't like the trend.
No. And it doesn't have to be there. I mean, there's plenty of ways to do the artwork and everything. And
I would like to see people being more responsible about this.
The Go Make a Sandwich, Go Make Me a Sandwich blog has another board game that Fantasy Flight took over Civilization. And then redid the Cards of Civilization. On the Cards of Civilization are historical figures. And she's got examples here of an empress from China, Catherine the Great of Russia, and Cleopatra.
Now, don't forget, she has Abraham Lincoln, and it looks like Alexander.
And the Kaiser Wilhelm.
And Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln's in his traditional suit.
Kaiser Wilhelm is in his German military uniform with the little pointy hat.
And Alexander's in his Roman breastplate, and he's got his helmet and robes.
It could be Caesar. So, excuse me, it says Bismarck under there. Wilhelm Bismarck. Still
okay,
pointy
well,
hat.
Yeah, and it does
pointy
say
Caesar. Pointy hat, German military guy.
It does say Caesar. Okay, yeah. So, but anyway, all the men are fully clothed in their traditional clothing that you would imagine them in any scenario.
And
then
women,
you have the women.
Yeah. You've got the Chinese empress whose breasts are pushed up.
They are covered, but they are still prominent, which is not necessarily traditional.
Generally traditional, they would be covered up and flattened down, I believe.
Yeah.
And then you've got, now Cleopatra, you can kind of argue this or that, because she was always, throughout history, has been kind of sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a bad rap. But, you know, but there she is.
And she very much fits the mold of the sexualized female, all the way down to the phallic positioning of the dagger, which you noticed earlier.
I thought that's what I get for being English.
Yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, that's there, unfortunately.
Oh, you just admitted that on air.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So, you know, I got to get my money's worth.
That's right. So. That degree's got to be worth something. But Catherine the Great, that's the one that really throws me the most.
Yeah.
She's standing here with an ample amount of cleavage and a skirt on her dress that is unbuttoned from the bottom all the way up to her waist.
Yeah, and that's basically would be in the actual pictures that you might see of her military garb.
Right,
and
which would never be unbuttoned.
It would never
like
be
that.
Unbuttoned and showing cleavage like that. And it doesn't have to.
You
know, so
The models for these women are attractive. The paintings are well done. They could have easily done this without sexualizing these women and gotten the point across that these are powerful, beautiful women that, you know, made a change in the world. They made a difference in the world.
Yeah.
And they did that without necessarily going out there shaking their hips and, you know, jiggle.
Yeah, and you know this is the thing. You know, we're kind of wondering: is this a trend? It seems to be. I mean, it's all the way down to Clue. It's got to be a trend,
right? I mean, we're seeing more and more of it in the artwork of the board games, and I think the reason that we're bringing this up today is because we feel like a change needs to be made. People need to talk about this.
Yeah, and I went back and looked at some artwork of some other older games, and about the only thing I found with sexism type thing was the Hunta board game, which represents a Banana Republic, and it's all got a cartoony cover on the front, but it represents a mistress that's fairly Barbie-ish, you know, and everything. So that one is basically one I found, but Dark Over didn't have women like that on it. I looked up the Dark Tower. The Dark Tower game, that popular game from Milton Bradley with the electronic Dark Tower in the middle. The artist for that did a card game called Dragon Masters. Mm-hmm. And that game has women portrayed in it, and they're all, you know, dressed in medieval type
dresses.
Didn't see
one bit of cleavage.
No.
Not one bit.
Didn't have to, and they're all powerful looking drawings.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done without doing this and possibly putting off half of your people that are playing the game.
Right. Okay, well, there's the marketing aspect. The fact that, you know, people claim they're marketing to men because the vast majority of gamers are men.
That's correct. Well, it has been historically that the vast majority of gamers are men. That may still be the case in role-playing games. But in board games, you've got family game night popping up everywhere. And you've got, you've got gamer sites out here with lots of women that play board games. So to get even more, you'd think you'd want to market to the women and not just market to the men and their base desires, you know, although I kind of like it sometimes.
But. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, my base desires but like I to be satisfied, but I want to play a game and I don't want it to be restricted to just the guys, you know?
Yeah.
I want women to be comfortable playing games.
And as somebody with a daughter.
Yeah, exactly. I have three daughters.
Mm-hmm.
One of whom is very much a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's kind of grown up with it and gotten used to the idea, but that doesn't mean it's right or that she's comfortable with
it. I had to be used to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay, as people come across this podcast, what I would really like you to do is either leave a comment or email us.
What you're seeing.
With what you're seeing. Any games that you may remember from the past that did sexualize women? Because, you know, obviously we haven't
not
played
necessarily
everything.
Role-playing games. We understand that.
We understand role-playing games. We're interested in the tabletop games.
Boris Vallejo and Frank Frazetta pretty much set the standard for the role-playing games.
And while I love their artwork, that's something else.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we want to know what you prefer to play. I mean, if you play female characters, whether you yourself are male or female, if you play female characters in a game, does it bother you to have the female model sexualized? Do you prefer to have them sexualized? We want your opinion on this. So jump on there and let us know. And even if you come across this podcast 3 months from now, let us know.
Yeah,
we still want to hear about it. I think that pretty much concludes episode 007. Okay. Did that at the beginning.
Oh, okay. So, this is Mike.
And this is Jason.
And we say...
keep rolling those dice.
Keep rolling the dice. No, oh, man. Trying to kill me.